You are listening to KHUHLP 104.9 FM, Seattle. Here at the Thunderbolt, I tend to cover a lot of controversial topics from controversial points of view. And therefore, some of the other folks that work with Hollow Earth Radio always appreciate it when I point out that while they may agree with the views expressed on this program, they also very well may not. And in either case, they are in no way responsible for that content. Therefore, if my show makes you want to start hurling blunt objects at people, then make sure you choose the correct target, which in this case would be me, not them. And now, on with the show! Guess, kids, there you were, enjoying your privileged white status, blissfully ignorant of the fact that your shoes were manufactured by a child slave, until one day, you turned on your radio, and you were struck by the Thunderbolt! Hello, Cascadia! It's time to wake up! Yes, you better grab that cup of coffee, because you are about to be struck by the thunderbolt of truth and justice. Here it comes. Yes, kids. The Thunderbolt is your guide to activism in Thurston County. I have news. I have commentary, I have a calendar for activist-related events, kick-ass music, and dumb jokes! So Cascadia is off of the couch and into the streets! It's time to save civilization from fiery apocalypse! Though even the apocalypse is gonna have to wait until I have had a cup of coffee!
And now, on behalf of myself and our strict no-refund policy, we are pleased to present for your viewing pleasure.
Welcome to the Thunderbolt for November 1st, 2019. This week's show is called Symbiotic Adventures in the Land of the Anti-Olympia. Enjoy. Dateline. September 19th, 2019. Reporting from Mary Grove College in Detroit, Michigan. Part 1. The Quest for Coffee. Yes, it is 5:30 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, and your intrepid reporter awakens from a deep sleep inside a full-size Crown Coach school bus. It is parked on the campus of Mary Grove College near downtown Detroit. Now, the beautiful and spacious campus at Mary Grove College has a park-like atmosphere consisting largely of vast swaths of lawn grass interspersed with a wide variety of hardwood trees. The buildings on the campus are huge and imposing, turn-of-the-century stone edifices in the ornate style of the time. And, since this is a Catholic school, religious iconography is prominently displayed inside the large and spacious buildings. Ornate street lamps, light landscaped driveways. Yes, kids, being at Mary Grove College is kind of like hanging out inside of a postcard. In my personal, if highly limited, experience, the biggest danger facing people on the campus of Mary Grove College is the distinct possibility that you may be hit on the head by a falling acorn. While it proved to be a slightly painful and somewhat unpleasant experience, it was hardly death-defying. So anyway, upon awakening in the Crown Coach school bus on the campus of Mary Grove College, your hero immediately embarks upon the same endeavor as he invariably and without fail performs first thing every morning. Yes, with obsessive, compulsive determination, he sets out upon his daily quest for coffee. Now, on the rare occasions that some obstacle appears and unexpectedly thwarts my quest, well, when facing such odious and inhumane conditions of extreme duress as that, I have been known to begin expressing a large number and a wide variety of highly negative worldviews at very loud volume. And so, after decades of having survived daunting challenges in a variety of contexts, your reporter has learned from hard experience to assure that preparations are completed the night before in order to reassure that the next morning's quest will end with the optimal outcome and with as few pitfalls or impediments to successful completion as possible. And this instance was no exception. Upon our arrival at Mary Grove College the previous day, your hero had already noted the 24-hour Marathon gas station and convenience store operating directly across the street from Mary Grove College. And thus he knew that he could almost certainly easily negotiate the early morning vicissitudes of even this very strange place and end up with a cup of hot coffee safely and securely wrapped within the firm grasp of both hands before having to deal with too many other aspects of the world at large beforehand. And thus, I left the protected and gated campus of Mary Grove College. And then, like some dark, malevolent magic spell had suddenly been cast, the physical reality of my surroundings instantly transformed from an idyllic wonderland into what appeared to be a set from some post-apocalyptic movie. Literally, right across the street, surrounding Mary Grove College for miles in every direction, the dominant feature of the cityscape is abandoned, boarded up, and decaying buildings in various states of decomposition, interspersed with vacant lots that probably previously contained buildings that had long ago been demolished. A typical city block in the areas surrounding downtown Detroit that I saw will often have a row of abandoned homes, with maybe one or two still occupied, or maybe not, and maybe a small business or two, or maybe not. While on nearly every block, there are also representative examples of the only institution that seems to be thriving in this milieu, i.e. churches. Yes, there are lots and lots of churches in Detroit. I had no idea the Palestinian Baptists were even a thing. But evidently, there are enough Palestinian Baptists in Detroit to warrant their very own church. There almost seem to be more churches in Detroit than there were inhabited homes. And thus, the instant I leave the campus of Mary Grove College, I face a row of abandoned buildings right across McNichols Street. With only a, quote, car wash, unquote, and a daycare center that are still in operation. And I place the car wash in quotation because I suspect that this, quote, car wash, unquote, was actually something else. As there were always lots of people hanging out and lots of people coming and going, and yet I never saw any cars actually being washed. But right there, on the corner of McNichols and Wyoming Streets, in the distance, I can see the object of my current interest lit up with bright lights specifically designed to invite and lure in those who are experiencing need. Yes, that Marathon gas station and convenience store with its 24-hour coffee pot. And thus, I proceed past the abandoned boarded-up buildings, past the, quote, car wash, unquote, and past the daycare center to the gas station, where I purchase a cup of coffee from a gentleman who is sitting behind a very thick layer of bulletproof glass, which is a feature in all the businesses in this neighborhood, including even the fast food restaurants. Then, upon successful completion of my quest, I decide that rather than walking all the way back with a full cup of coffee in my hands, I would instead hang out in front of the store and get a feel for the neighborhood as I drank my coffee. Now, this is a very busy gas station, even at this early hour, and one thing I soon noticed was that in the 20 minutes or so that I hung out there, I was the only white person that I saw. In addition, numerous people gave me curious looks, obviously wondering what the hell I was doing there. And indeed, a few minutes later, I overheard a young gentleman ask the cashier, "What the hell is that white boy doing hanging out in front of your store?" Then shortly thereafter, the young man evidently decided to investigate the question for himself and thus approached me and asked if I had a cigarette. And I said, "Sure, man, come on over." He approached very slowly. He was obviously hyper alert and fully ready for whatever. As he approached, he was closely scrutinizing me up and down, and he even more closely scrutinized the day pack that was sitting on the walkway next to me. And then he stopped 5 feet away. Since he obviously did not want to come any closer, I tossed the cigarette to him through the air, and he very adeptly caught it. I decided to immediately ease his mind, and so I explained that I was attending a conference across the street and that they didn't have any coffee over there yet. Now, upon learning this, the young man visibly relaxed. The white boy did indeed have a non-threatening reason to be hanging out in front of the store after all. I mentioned that I was from a town that was almost pure white, and that I found being the only white guy around to be an interesting experience. His response was, "Yeah, you must be. However, don't worry. Even when I'm the only white guy around, my white privilege is still extant. For me, being treated with deep suspicion due solely to my race was an interesting and unusual anomaly. For this young man, it is a constant, never-ending, death-defying thing that is in his face every time he tries to go out in public." Part 2. In the land of the anti-Detroit. So, anyway, I was in Detroit because I attended the Symbiosis Conference. And whilst there, I picked up a few new listeners. So, for the sake of my new listeners, please allow me now to briefly describe my adopted hometown of Olympia, Washington. It is a small town. Population, 50,000. But since it is the state capital, and since it is the home of one of the finest liberal arts colleges in the world, in the form of the Evergreen State College, this means there are cultural, political, and social scenes that are way out of proportion to Olympia's small size. And in fact, it's almost like we get the best parts of a much larger city without having to deal with the traffic or with the deep crazy around every corner. Another thing about Olympia is that it is 97% white. And to make matters even worse, most of these white people are privileged liberals who vote for Democrats. Now, while that may seem idyllic to some of my new out-of-town listeners from less progressive areas of the country, dealing with privileged white liberals carries challenges of its own. However, I will also say this about Olympia. I have been all over North America literally more times than I can count, and I could live anywhere that I wanted to live. And I chose to settle down here in Olympia. And as far as comparisons betwixt Olympia and Detroit go, voting for Democrats is about as far as it goes. And that fact in itself says a lot of not good things. Otherwise, Olympia and Detroit are almost as completely the opposite from each other as it is possible to imagine. For example, Detroit is full of vacant lots everywhere, often surrounded by what could be accurately described as ruins. Whereas every available lot of empty land in Olympia has some land developer salivating over it, wanting to construct yet another high-end townhouse and or some too expensive condos for all of the privileged white liberals who want to join us in our wonderful little Olympia bubble world. And now, all of the artists and the activists and many of the other people who are responsible for making Olympia into such a cool town are now being driven out of town by gentrification. And meanwhile, a tent city that literally takes up an entire city block sits right across the street from the downtown transit center, and scores of smaller tent camp pop up like mushrooms everywhere that the land developers have not yet developed. And since Olympia is so liberal, then rather than jailing all the homeless people, Olympia takes a more enlightened approach. And they instead simply try to hide all of the houseless people and sweep them under the rug so that no one can see them. Liberals find it embarrassing to leave their nice warm townhouses in the morning only to be confronted by people living in tents or worse. They would rather not see that. Thus, there is an opaque fence completely surrounding the big officially sanctioned tent camp downtown. So it's right there, but it's invisible. A typical example of this mindset was when our city manager commented that it makes people uncomfortable when they have to step over people who are sleeping on a sidewalk. Well, here's an experiment you can try at home. Spend a night sleeping on a sidewalk and then try stepping over someone else who is sleeping on a sidewalk. And then tell us which experience makes you more uncomfortable. While a lot of local voters appreciated our city manager's concern for their well-being, I suspect that those voters did not include very many people who sleep on sidewalks. Part 3. On the bus and off the bus. So, for me, the trip to Detroit was basically a 10-day working vacation, helping Rick Fellows drive his Crown Coach to Detroit for the Symbiosis Revolution Congress. The bus was stuffed with what turned out to be 15 mostly young anarchists from Portland and Olympia. Oh yeah. As for the trip itself, every day I get the queue. That many people
to get on a bus that takes me to you.
Crammed into such a small moving space.
I'm so nervous I just sit and smile.
For so many hours on end.
The house is only another mile.
Worked out much better than most would have expected. On the return trip, we spent a night in a state park near Mandan, North Dakota, where I escaped the rain by squatting in a teepee. Now, the town of Mandan was named after the Indian tribe that used to live there before a bunch of white people killed all of them and stole all their land. And then they built a town upon their graves that they subsequently named after them. The brochure from the state park invited us to visit historic Fort Lincoln, which was on the grounds of the park, and to imagine what it would have been like to be a soldier here in the 1870s. We decided to pass on that experience. Since there weren't any Indians to kill and steal all their stuff, I decided the experience just wouldn't be the same anyway. We also tried to visit the Custer Battlefield, but learned that the National Park Service charges extortion-level entrance fees and that they were closed anyway. But I suspect that the brochures at the Custer Battlefield did not invite visitors to imagine what it was like to be a soldier in the 1870s at the Little Bighorn River. as the Little Bighorn River was a far less pleasant place to be for a soldier than Fort Lincoln had been. And whilst traveling on the magic bus, I also again noted the differences between eastern and western Montana. For in the west, the valleys are so wide and the mountains are so tall that it is not unusual for the horizon to be well over 100 miles away in every direction. Big sky indeed. But when you reach the plains, on the other hand, an area of the country that I have dubbed the Pancake Lands, then suddenly your horizon is almost exactly 2 miles in every direction. And as you travel, one seems to stay within that same 2 mile radius circle nearly forever. So we'll be back with more about the symbiosis revolution after a quick station break. See you in a minute. The views expressed on the Thunderbolt are my views, and no one else's. Those views do not necessarily reflect the views of KHUH-FM, nor anyone that has anything to do with KHUH-FM. And now, back to the Thunderbolt. All right, welcome back. So as to the Symbiosis Revolution Congress itself, while I fully intended to report on the conference, it should also be noted that journalism was not my primary interest in attending. I was there first as a participant. Therefore, though I did identify myself as a journalist a few times, and while I am going to quote a few of the participants here, I was not going around formally conducting interviews. So the first thing I'd like to say about the actual organizing of this event was that it was first rate. And I ate better at this conference than at any other such conference I have ever attended. So, kudos to the organizers. And I mention this because when I questioned two of the organizers, after noting that they were two of the people that had half-killed themselves to put this event on, I was curious as to whether or not they considered it to have been worth the effort. And neither one of them ever actually answered my question. And thus, I am also happy to report that the Symbiosis Congress turned out to be just what I was hoping it would be, i.e., the first step to creating a network for all of these tens of thousands of tiny little sequestered organizations that are doing God's work all over the country, yet doing it alone and isolated. Several such organizations sent representatives to the Symbiosis Congress, and I will be describing a few of them for the November 15th show. However, I consider the mere fact that such a network is actually now on the table made the Symbiosis Congress a success in and of itself. Yes, if everyone were to start networking with everyone else, then our influence and our capabilities would grow by several orders of magnitude. These folks over here have been doing this shite for years, and this is what worked for them, and this is what did not work for them, and here's what they have to share with you, and here's what they need from you. One early concern of mine when I joined the conference, though, was the distinct lack of a racial diversity. While there were several very notable exceptions, the vast bulk of the attendees at the Symbiosis Congress were privileged white radicals. And yes, I resemble that remark myself. Still, at the end, I personally considered the conference to have been a success, though it did not end up where it ended up without some rocky patches. On Friday, it appeared as if all the white radicals were about to begin their stereotypical habit of lining up for circular firing squads when, with perfect irony, a black woman stepped into the breach, took over the facilitation duties, and ended up saving the whole frigging conference from itself. We didn't actually sing Kumbaya in the end, but it would not have been completely inappropriate. When the conference adjourned, we had agreed on the things we agreed on and determined to continue debate remotely on the things we did not agree on. And now we had faces and personalities of people that we had actually met in person to put with all of those electronic exchanges. And that fact alone changes the entire dynamic of electronic communications. This thing might actually become a thing. And I'm very glad for that. Part 5. The Olympia Assembly Assembled. Those of you who actually listen to the Thunderbolt calendar every week probably remember hearing the Olympia Assembly often featured there. Now, I personally know most of the activists in town, but I had no idea of who made up the Olympia Assembly. I just knew they were doing good things and that I wanted to promote them. So it turns out the several members of the Olympia Assembly loaded onto Rick's bus for the trip to Detroit. During the trip, it was very good to hear young folks going on for hours in endless detail about the new world that they want to create for themselves. And to that end, these kids spent a whole bunch of time, energy, and love to author a lengthy document they called Points of Unity, wherein they tried to codify the things that unified everyone involved with Symbiosis. Everybody's just like you, it's true. Everybody wants a good thing too. And they attempted to have their document adopted by Symbiosis as the official Points of Unity. And while I greatly appreciated their effort, I also knew that if these kids presented such a document of that length and with that many details to a crowd like this one, then they were going to have their document ripped to shreds right in front of their faces. I had a few problems with it myself, for that matter. So as I listened to the Ole Assembly kids talking on the bus, I found myself curious as to how they were going to react to having a bunch of people pan and nitpick their work over the rocks. And I found myself curious as to how they would react to that. And to their credit, while they expressed extreme disappointment, they ultimately accepted the consensus of the group with grace nonetheless. Ultimately, in the big picture, I would have to say yes. It's a monumental good thing. Part 6. Points of Disunity. So one thing about that Points of Unity document that those OA kids produced, I am convinced that we need to start seriously targeting people who do not already agree with us. And in order to communicate with people, you need to go where they are. And the more published points of unity we have, then the more people we will cut off. There are three people in Olympia who will not speak to me. And they pretend that they do not see me whenever we encounter each other in public simply because I am against gun control laws. Now I have about 17 or 23 very good reasons for my opposition to gun control laws. And I am ready to debate that issue at any time. But the point I'm making here is that all of these three people who won't talk to me, I probably agree with them on 95% of all other issues. But since I disagree with them on that one single issue, they have designated me as the enemy. If you are going to refuse to work with anyone unless they 100% agree with you on every single issue, then you don't want a society. What you want is a cult. If we're gonna actually get anything done, we need to get a large portion of the general public on our side. And saying things like, we agree that capitalism is a kleptocracy that enables psychopaths, well, that is indeed exactly what capitalism is. And I regularly describe it as such on this show, often using rhetoric that is even harsher than that. But there are ways that you can convey that back in language that is not going to freak out some regular Joe who has been brainwashed for three generations to think that capitalism is just the cat's meow. Yes, kids, we need to educate people, not isolate or condemn them because they were miseducated. And that's all we have time for this week. For the November 15th show, we will be covering several of the organizations that attended the Symbiosis Revolution Congress, as well as an insane art project that sits amidst the ruins of Detroit. Until then, though, it's time to get to work. All right. So for Olympia listeners, we go to the activist events calendar. And for Seattle listeners, we have some music. And whatever the disease, we're going to get down this week with The Cure. Enjoy. That was Kick Muck by the Osric Tentacles. And before that, we had Hot, Hot, Hot from The Cure. For Free Radio Olympia and KHUH listeners, I have 6 more minutes of music, but otherwise, I'm out of here. See you next week. The Thunderbolt is a production of Dancing Angel Media, which is solely responsible for the content. Neither the stations that air the Thunderbolt, their sponsors, their members, their underwriters, nor anyone else that has much to do with anything else in any way, is responsible for the content of the Thunderbolt, nor do they necessarily agree with the views expressed on the Thunderbolt. If you have any comments, or if you wish to express an opposing opinion, you should send an email to dana98501@gmail.com, and we will make arrangements. And I hope that you have a day. And a quick note here, the Thunderbolt is on Facebook, where you can find links to the show and to the show notes, or you can go to radioforall.net. That's radio4all.net, where you can also find the show notes, as well as a year's worth of downloadable episodes of the Thunderbolt.
Thank you very much.